Hey, I'm George Corliss.
I'm Jelaine Fenner.
And I'm Teresa Williams with the Wexford Conservation District.
And she's the Garden Gal, and welcome back to Good Growing with a Garden Gal. And Teresa, we're going to be talking about the crop of the month. And here's something that I never knew before. You can roast cauliflower?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, tell me about this.
I've heard about that.
If you roast cauliflower, you can just spread a very light layer of olive oil or butter, whatever your preference is, and roast it in the oven like you would any other vegetable, and it brings out a nutty sweetness in the cauliflower, and I think it's fantastic.
So are you saying you have the cauliflower, you know, it's like the broccoli, it's a big clump. Are you supposed to cut it, though, so you got the little florets, is that what they call them?
I'd like to cut it in chunks, because the more surface area you have, the more chance you have for that brown nuttiness to come out. So I don't dice it, but in nice-sized chunks.
So roasted cauliflower. Now, my wife, Joy, makes roasted vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And she does just exactly like you said. She takes all of the vegetables, you know, small potatoes, the red skin potatoes a lot of times, and mushrooms and onions and carrots and you name it. It's whatever's the, you know, on sale at the supermarket is going in there. And she dabbles it, just like you said, with a little bit of olive oil, all of it. And then she puts her seasonings or whatever on there, and she sticks it in there. Now, you don't want to leave it in there for a long time, do you? You just don't want these things to be mush when you get done with them.
What you're looking for is for them to get a little bit brown. I'd say maybe 350 degrees is a good temperature.
Well, what do they call that? El dente? Is that how they do that with the rice?
It's pasta is el dente.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay, so I just learned something like that. Not with rice, though, huh?
Not that I've heard, but I don't know everything, George. Well, there's lots I don't know.
I don't know.
But pasta special.
Pasta is.
There you go. Now, speaking of pasta, you could make some sort of a cheese sauce if you wanted with cauliflower
or some
of these other vegetables, couldn't you? And a lot of times people don't even think of that. They think of marinara, and that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. And I love it in curries. If any of your listeners enjoy a spicy food, an Indian curry with some cauliflower is really good. And then as a soup, flavored or seasoned a little bit with tarragon, and it seems to be a nice pairing, cauliflower and tarragon.
Okay, what's tarragon?
It's an herb. It has a slight licorice taste, but licorice doesn't describe it really well, but it's the closest thing I can think of to some other taste. And French tarragon, you use sparingly, I think brings out the taste of cauliflower really well.
Okay, and what is it, like tarragon, what is it, a smell, what is it?
It's a green herb.
Okay.
And you just use it sparingly like you would maybe thyme, but switch it up and use it, tarragon.
I gotcha. Okay, and like cauliflower, I was going to say cucumbers. Like cauliflower, we were talking about a potato substitute. Do you want to share a little bit about that?
I know that I happen to love potatoes, and we grow a lot of potatoes, so I don't personally cook it as a potato substitute, but I know there's a lot of people who, for one reason or another, potatoes don't work for them, and so I've seen a lot of people use cauliflower in place of potatoes and make a mashed cauliflower.
Now, I've also seen it, and like I said at the beginning of the program, I only have one kidney, and if you remember, I was on dialysis for, about 8 months, I think is what it was.
It wasn't a year, but it was quite a few months.
Yeah, and the Lord, for whatever reason, when my wife and I got married, Joy, she put me on a pretty strict diet, and then she put me on some herbs and some minerals. And Teresa, within a month, I was off dialysis.
That's amazing.
It is.
But people that are on dialysis, and it's surprising how many people are out there that are on dialysis or that struggle with their kidneys. Potatoes are like the number one most arch villain enemy to them. And most people love potatoes, you know, French fried and fried potatoes and scalloped potatoes and baked potatoes. I just love them. And so you need to look for some alternatives, and here's one that you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I noticed, you know, you can make the cauliflower and just use your beaters, right? You just you boil it or whatever you want to do.
And mash it however you normally mash potatoes.
And put some butter in there, some seasonings, and it looks almost, it's probably a little bit off color from potatoes a little bit, but you don't even notice it for the most part. And like I said, I was really surprised. I didn't even know it was mashed cauliflower when I ate that like that. Some people actually take mashed potatoes and mashed cauliflower and mix them together. So another idea.
Well, the thing is, the cauliflower looks like mashed potatoes, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Almost exactly like mashed potatoes as you go through there. Okay, so we're going to be talking about growing cauliflower. Is this another one of those over the winter types of situations?
No, it is not. And we're talking about cauliflower today, but to enjoy it this time of year, you really need to have planted it in the spring. And a lot of our crops are like that. You have to plant them in the spring. But I thought, you know, this is the time of year when we're harvesting cauliflower. So let's pay some attention to this.
And we're also thinking about what am I going to plant next year? That's right. And do you need a lot of room to plant cauliflower?
Actually, yeah. They're a space hog. You know, the minimum amount of space that they need is like 2 feet by 2 feet for one plant, and you only harvest one head of cauliflower out of it. So if you have a small garden, this might not be the plant for you. But if you've got plenty of growing room, consider cauliflower.
Okay. And then what are some other, you know, plants that you want to plant around those so that they get along really well? Is there anything like that, or that's not that important?
And not so much with cauliflower. And their leaves are so large that they shade out other things. Mm. They're a long season crop, so you could plant maybe, while the plants are young, you could stick in a few radishes or something around them just to help you get more out of that space. But they're a space hog, and they create a lot of shade around them.
They need a lot of water?
They need a steady supply of water and a steady supply of nutrients. If they don't have, they're a bit finicky. I will say that the cauliflower is a bit one of our more finicky vegetables. So it's super important with the cauliflower to give it a steady supply of moisture throughout the summer and to make sure the nutrient levels are also readily available.
Is this something where you can stagger the planting so you can harvest it at different times?
You can if you pay attention to your varieties. There's some varieties that have been developed that are all right at tolerating the summer heat. None of them are great, but the some that I'd put into the all right category for summer heat, and some that do not do well at all in summer heat and need to have the cooler temperatures. So if you look in a seed catalog that handles a variety of cauliflower seeds, they'll tell you suitable for fall harvest, suitable for summer harvest. And so you want to make sure if you want to grow it all season long that perhaps you grow one variety in the summer or for harvest in the summer and a different variety for harvest in the fall and maybe even a third variety if you want to put in that early spring crop.
So what kind of varieties are there?
You know, in the last 10 years, breeding in cauliflower has gotten really interesting, and we now have we can get purple cauliflower, we can get orange cauliflower, and green cauliflower.
Sounds like potatoes.
not quite as much variety, but enough. And I found that the colored varieties taste a little bit milder than the white varieties. If you were to eat white cauliflower raw, you might notice a little bit of sharpness to the taste. I don't notice it that much with the other varieties that have a color to them.
A lot of nutrients in cauliflower, folks. And to all of you guys out there like me, that kind of turn your nose up at it a little bit. If you get some sort of a dip and you're going to eat raw cauliflower or broccoli and carrots and celery and stuff, you know, that'll get you through. But this is really going to help you in the long run as far as with nutrition, isn't it?
Sure, sure it will. And especially, you know, if you're not really a fan of raw veggies, try roasting them, because roasting keeps the nutrients in them. They don't soak out in any cooking water. And it turns some of the starches into sugars, and wow.
Roasted. I was going to say, it gives a little different flavor.
Yeah, it's really good when you roast the vegetables.
So a question for you, if we boil our cauliflower, would it be better for me to drink the water and get more nutrition that we boiled it in?
Or use it for soup stock.
Oh, yeah. Boy, there's a great idea. Yeah. Do you do that, Jelaine?
I've not been a big fan of cauliflower, but I'm learning to like it better, so starting to use it a little bit more.
Yeah. Most of the time I tell, you know, most guys, if it looks good, right? It has to look good.
Yeah. Yeah. All food needs to look
good. If it looks like mush, you don't want to eat it.
Yeah. That's the thing. Well, that's like sometimes some of the squashes that people make, it just looks like mush.
Right. And if you overboil it, frankly, you're taking out the flavor as well as the nutrition. So, you know, you don't want to overcook your vegetables.
You're a big broiling fan, aren't you?
I'm a big roasting fan. Yes. Yeah. Or steaming. Steaming.
Too. Well, that's better for you nutrition-wise.
Yes, it
either is. Either roasting or steaming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then what about temperature-wise? I mean, do they thrive like in the 70-degree rate?
They thrive in our spring and fall temperatures more so than our summer. Summers tend to stress cauliflower. So that's again, where you want to match the variety you're growing to the temperature conditions that you have. Now, if you're going to harvest the cauliflower in the fall, of course it's got to grow through the summer. The critical time when it doesn't like heat is when those heads are forming. Because if you have the wrong temperatures, you can get little button heads and not get a harvestable head out of that. Either if you set it out too early in the spring and your temperatures are below 50, or sometimes if you make it or time it so that you want to harvest it in the summer and you have a variety that's not adapted to that summer heat, it won't produce a nice head for you.
Okay,
gotcha.
I've got a question. Then the varieties, you know, how do you know what kind of varieties are best to harvest in the different time of the year? Because you were saying, you know, that you can harvest some through the summer, or then you have some you're going to harvest later in the fall.
I've seen in seed catalogs where they give you a chart that shows for each variety ideal planting times and harvesting times. And so your seed catalogs are a great resource to learn that. If you're going into a store and just pulling them off the shelf, a lot of times that information isn't there. So you really need to do your homework and look in the seed catalog. And maybe that same variety is available locally off the shelf. But the homework part you probably have to do on your own.
Well, because I know sometimes, you know, like when you get into sweet corn. Well, you want to start plant it a little earlier because you want some earlier, but you keep then plant a little later so you get it later. But it can still be all the same variety.
Right. Yes, and sweet corn, that works well. Not so much with cauliflower.
Okay. Now, if you just tuned in, folks, you're listening to Good Growing with a Garden Gal, and that's Teresa Williams. She's right here, and Jelaine and I are kind of tossing questions at her right, left, and in between. Teresa, okay, it's at the end of the growing season, getting real close if it's not. Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to ask you a question. What about tilling the ground or not tilling the ground? And I know, you know, you guys are with a conservation district, and when you go into almost every county up here in northern Michigan anyway, there's usually a sign when you come in that actually says that. But I noticed that some farmers, you know, big farmers, plow, and then others just let her lay all, you know, winter long, and they don't plow until the springtime. Why is that?
Well, it might have to do with a couple of things. One is how much land is that farmer farming, and how much equipment and how many employees do they have? And it might be a time management strategy where they've got the people and the tools such that if they don't do some of their tillage in the fall, they can't possibly get done what they need to get done in the spring. So that's one reason why somebody might till in the fall. But another consideration is for soil health, if at all possible, we want something covering that soil over the winter and protecting it. And that could be a cover crop, or it could be just leaving crop residues on the surface of the soil.
Now, we had talked a little bit in some of our earlier episodes about the rototilling and how that's probably not the best thing that you can do with your garden, although we've all done it for decades, it seems like. And now we've got these great big rototillers that are so neat on the back of the tractors that swath a 48-inch, you know, and it's like, wow, I like this, instead of sitting there and then shaking like this when you're going down the road. And as you do that, is that actually destroying some of the things that you've done to the soil to try to build it up?
It does, and that's a hard thing for a lot of people to hear.
Okay.
When you do a rototiller,
but
especially,
it's a man's thing. I like that. You know.
Well, it's just like farmers. That's where the no-till became popular because it was better for the ground. But most farmers have a hard time looking at a piece of ground that's not been plowed and nice.
Want it nice and pretty.
Yeah, it's a cultural change because we've for generations that's been our norm is to plow, and I'm not going to say that all plowing is bad, but I am going to say, have a reason why you're plowing, not just because you've always done it. Mm-hmm. And not just because you like the way it looks. Have a purpose to your plowing. Like maybe you're going from sod into an area you're growing. Well, then that's really, plowing is a very good option because it's difficult for a new crop to get started in old sod. So maybe that's why. Or maybe you're using manure and you really need that nitrogen from manure. And the way to keep that nitrogen around is to incorporate the new manure, bury it in the soil. So that might be a situation where you want to. But I wouldn't plow just because that's what I've always done. Have a reason why. Have a specific reason.
But what about the backyard gardener?
The backyard gardener, I tell the backyard gardener the same thing. Have a reason why. If let's say you had a crop of beans in one part of your garden, and the next year you're going to plant carrots, there's no reason to plow. There's no reason to till. That soil has already been under cultivation. Beans don't create a lot of residue that you would need to worry about over the winter. So that soil might do very well with just a forking in the spring and then planting.
That's work.
Yeah, that is true.
You're putting some air down into the ground, right?
Yeah, you just, there are a particular kind of garden forks that are meant to just lift and slightly aerate the soil. Broad fork is what they're called, and we use those. And they're really not that hard because you can do a 3-foot wide swath with this fork, and gravity helps you tremendously. So the work really isn't all that hard. I don't mean like taking a fork and actually lifting the soil out of the ground.
But okay. And a cover crop, what would mm-hmm. you suggest for, you know, you've got a garden that it just seems like it didn't produce as well as what it normally did. So you want to add those nutrients and vitamins and mm-hmm. stuff back to the soil. What kind of a cover crop would you suggest?
It's getting kind of late now to plant very many cover crops. Oats will still grow a little bit. Rye is probably our most cold-tolerant crop. If you want to build up the soil, cover crops planted now do protection, but if they're immediately tilled under in the spring to grow again, they don't get the opportunity to do a lot for building our soil. If you truly want to build the soil, you might want to look at putting part of your garden or part of your farm in cover crops for a year to help them truly do as much as they can. And in the best case scenario, you've got a mix of cover crops. You might have a grass, such as even wheat, or you could add a legume such as a field pea or a vetch, and these what they call cocktail mixes of cover crops, they help a lot to build your soil quality. And if you've got heavy soil with a compaction layer, some farmers are even trying what they call tillage radishes, which have a long taproot and they can help break up hard pans.
Really?
Yep, really.
You know, it's interesting, and Jelaine, I don't know if you know that or not, but in the Bible, God actually gave counsel to the Israelites that every 7 years they let their gardens go fallow. And so, and we call it rotation, kind of what they're doing now. I kind of like that. But that was good counsel back then, wasn't it? Just to kind of let it build up.
Again. As long as they had that soil covered in, I don't know if there were instructions related to that. But
I don't know.
Bare soil left for a year, that's not a good option. But if you plant a crop in it that you don't, like a cover crop that you don't intend to harvest, that is a good option.
I think a lot of times, too, there was like the voluntary plants that came up, you mm-hmm. know, from the seeds and stuff. And they had to actually leave that for the poor people to be able to harvest and to be able to eat. And I thought, wow, that was interesting. I need to do a little bit more study on that. But
well, nowadays, though, usually you rotate. You don't keep playing.
Right.
So you don't usually leave anything fallow. You know, you put a different crop there where you had been growing something.
All right, Teresa, last question. Next year,
mm-hmm.
okay, you're going to plant all the same things that, you know, you normally plant. Are there any new types of plants that you're going to give a try to? Or are you going to try to do things a little bit differently with some of the different things that you have planted in the past?
Well, every year I try to increase what I know by trying out a new experiment. And like this year, I tried a new way of terracing tomatoes that I ended up really liking. And I tried 11 varieties of pole beans to see what pole bean do I really like.
What was the synopsis there?
I love the bean called rattlesnake. It's my personal favorite. It's a green bean with little purple flecks or stripes in it, and I think it's a very sweet bean that just happens to be my personal favorite.
Okay.
I haven't planned yet to see what my new. I will be figuring out something. That's usually due in the winter.
Telling people to have fun with this,
yeah, and
like
absolutely.
Instead of just planting the same bean that you've ever planted, plant three or four different. I mean, you usually end up with beans coming out of your ears anyway. Plant three or four different.
And see what works for you. See what you like. And seeds, if you keep them cool and dry, such as in a refrigerator, you can extend their shelf life or their viable life for quite a long time.
And then you're looking at heirlooms then, as we write with the seeds, is what you're talking about?
Well, any seeds. You can extend their life by keeping them in the refrigerator.
Okay. Hmm. I guess I didn't realize that.
I have a little. You've seen these dorm fridges that they have that are maybe
little
cubes. I have one of those dedicated just for seeds.
Hmm. No kidding.
Yeah.
So you keep the seeds cool. It helps them last longer.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And what's the most enjoyable part for you in this entire gardening scenario?
It's the planning of the garden.
Is it?
It really is. Yeah. And I love starting my own transplants. I grow all my own transplants, and I find that very fun.
When do you start them?
The onions I start as early as Valentine's Day, and that's the earliest crop I start.
Hmm. That's pretty early.
When do you plant them?
The onions, by the 1st of May. They go out into the
because they
garden.
Can take a little colder temperatures.
Oh yeah, they can, and they take a long time to. I grow from seed, and so it takes a long time to go from an onion seed to an onion bulb.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, folks, that's our program for today. We just want to thank you so much for tuning in, and this has been Grid Growing for with the Garden Gal. You can actually go onto our website and listen to past programs, and we encourage you to do that at strongtowerradio.org. And Teresa, let's say somebody wants to get in touch with you at the Soil Conservation District. Do you have a phone number there?
The number for the Wexford Conservation District is 231-775-7681, extension 3. If you're not from Wexford County, every county has a conservation district. So just the easiest way is to use a search engine like Google and just type in your county's name and conservation district, and you'll come up with your local district.
And they should be in the phone book, right?
They are, but sometimes it can be tough to find in the phone book because a lot of us are located in a USDA office. And so sometimes it's challenging to find your conservation district in the phone book, but if you do a search on the internet or get a friend to do it for you,
I was
going to
say, not everybody's young, George. There are people still use phone books.
We were talking the other day about party lines, and it was like the kids were saying, "What was that?"
Yeah.
You know, it just it's kind of the way that it was. You got a chance to listen in to everybody else's business. So, well, folks, we just want to thank you so much for tuning in. And make sure to check out the Strong Tower Radio schedule at our website, strongtowerradio.org. And you can see when Good Growing with a Garden Gal will be on. I'm George Corliss.
I'm Jillian Fenner.
And I'm Teresa Williams.
And you have a great day.
Bye.